right. So this is going to be a two-parter, I expect, this Friday and next Friday, because it's too big a topic and too important a topic to race through. But we're going to talk about Karbanos, and I'm going to use this opportunity, I think, to collect a variety of different ideas to try to explain what need it is that Karbanos fill. And in order to explain that, what's the problem with Karbanos? Why is it that Chazal, going back to the time of the Gemara and working all the way through till today, have felt a need to explain them, to take them as more than just a ritual, but to find a purpose to them? Why is that?
Well, because, I mean, after the destruction of the Mikdash, we don't have this, you know, this channel of Karbanos, so it could, you know, people might rationalize to themselves that, like, it's irrelevant, we don't need it anymore, and have less of a desire maybe to return to a Mikdash.
I mean, things that are absent are not necessarily forgotten or undesirable. It's not by dint of their absence that we would devalue them. I think the problem that you're pointing to is the lack of relevance, perhaps. In other words, it isn't just, we don't have this anymore, therefore why would we ever want it? But it's hard to understand its purpose. But I think there's a theological issue behind that lack of purpose, right? If God is intangible, if God is immortal, right? God doesn't eat, so why are we bringing animal sacrifices? In what way, shape, or form is this going to be at all significant for Creator and infinite, immortal, omniscient, omnipotent, God? It doesn't really seem to fit. And then there are two secondary problems that go with it. Because if the issue is only, I don't understand why do this, you know, there are a whole host of things that we do, even if we don't necessarily understand the benefit, right? That wouldn't arouse the challenge that Karbanos posed for people. But I think the secondary problems are sort of practical issues that lead us to say, this isn't something we'd want to do. Meaning, Judaism teaches the value of all of Hashem's creations, right? And particularly those that are alive. Waste is prohibited, right? Baltashlis. How are we to justify destroying that which we have? It's not only that I don't understand why one would do it, but I understand why one wouldn't do it. You know? I think that's a big part of it. And along with that, you know, Tzar Balei Chaim, we're warned against painting living creatures. Keep in mind, when we talk about Shechita, that it's not that our problem is with the death of creatures. Our problem, you know, if it has a function, if it's not a Baal Tashlis issue, right, then it can be justified. But we put a premium on doing so in a painless way, or minimizing the pain that's involved. So if that's really true, you know, the carbon process inherently will involve some level of confusion for the animal. And not only confusion for the animal, but not all of them are shechita, right? Not all of the rituals that we associate with Karbanos are shechita, which, you know, there's a whole wealth of literature on shechita. Is there a benefit of it in terms of reducing the pain to the animal, the speed of it, the smooth swipe of the knife, and so on? That won't apply for all of the things that we do with Karbanos. There's more to be said about that, but I don't want to get hung up on the specifics of it as much as just to point out, it isn't only that I don't understand why we would bring the carbon, it's that bringing the carbon seems to fly in the face of values of Judaism. So the practical issues, in truth, are relatively easy to resolve. The waste issue, for example, and it led up to this anyway with what I said about Shechita. If there's value to a carbon, then I'll tell you it's not waste. I brought you the Taz in source 1 on the sheet. The Taz is talking about a different issue. The Taz is talking about a problem you've likely heard of, about not cutting down fruit trees. So he gives you a case of Rav Chisda in the Gemara, where he had date palms, and they were being damaged by the grapevines, because the grapevines were drawing all of the water, of the, the other way around. The date palms were drawing water that the grapevines needed, and the grapevines were more important, and therefore Chisda was justified in cutting back the date palms. So that indicates to us that the not every case of destruction is necessarily considered waste. You gauge destruction against benefit. Excuse me. A similar line, which I bring in number two just because people like this line, is the Gemara in Shabbos. Rav Papa, if I remember correctly, is a beer maker in the Gemara. So keep that in mind. V'amar Rav Papa, Hayman de'efshar l'mishti shichra v'shasi chamra over mishum baltashkes. Rav Papa says, you know, if you could have beer and instead you drink wine, you're liable for waste. As I added in brackets, you're wasting your money. Right? It's much more expensive for you to get the wine. Buy my beer. But then the Gemara says, v'alav vilsahi. It's not true. Baltashkes de'gufa adif. The beer is worse for you. You know, you can take this to your doctor and ask the doctor about the effects of beer on you versus the effects of wine on you. But he says that the beer is worse for you, and therefore it's more important not to waste your body, even if it's going to cost you more. The point being, once again, we weigh destruction on one level and destruction on another level, and we choose the lesser type of destruction. It could be the benefit of the carbon outweighs the destruction involved in the carbon. So I can deal with the waste issue. As far as Tsar Balei Chaim, it is clear that mitzvos override concerns for cruelty, right? Beyond the world of karbanos. Take, for example, the Sayer la'azazel of Yom Kippur, the scapegoat, which is not really a Yom Kippur, not really a karban per se. That's a debate, whether you view Sayer la'azazel as a karban. But you know, the idea that it is pushed off of the cliff, right? That would strike me as something that would bother us as cruelty, and yet that seems to be the mitzvah. There are other rituals that are like that. And it's hard to claim, really, that we're going to say that God is merciful as a philosophy of mitzvot. The Rambam points it out. When the Mishnah in Brachos says, that the Chazan gets up there and says, God, you're merciful to the birds with the mitzvah, Shiluach HaKain, sending away the mother bird, so you should be merciful to us, right? So the Mishnah says that's a really bad thing to say, right? So look at the Rambam's comment on that. Look at the Rambam's explanation for why it's a bad thing to say. Hushe Yomar, this Mishnah is talking about the Chazan saying, Kashem Shechasta Alkan Tzibor, just like you had mercy on the bird's nest, V'amarta L'sikacha Emal Habanim, and you said, don't take the mother with the young, Kach Chusaleinu, so too you should have mercy on us. Sha'omer Kein Meshat Kenoso. He says, if somebody says this, we silence him. Lefi shehu omer shetam mitzvah zu biglal rachme HaKadosh Baruch Hu al ha'ov. Because this person is saying that the reason for the mitzvah is because God is merciful for the bird. Ve'ein okein. He says it's just wrong. Lefi she'ilu hayaderach rachamim. If this were really about mercy, lo hayamater hashchita klal. Right? If God were really saying, I don't want you to be cruel to the bird, then we would just say, don't shech the birds at all. What do you mean? Don't take the, right? If you're shechting the, if you're taking away, then just in this context, you're taking away the young. But that's okay. We take away the young without the mother present. So when she comes back, you think the bird brain idea, so she just forgets everything? Is that what you think is going on? The Eli mitzvah shemit shein latam. This is simply a mitzvah that is conveyed to us by divine revelation, and stop trying to mind read God. So, you know, there are lessons I can learn from a mitzvah, but that's not the same thing as saying I figured it all out. So, the practical concerns with karbanos we can wrestle with and resolve. And say, don't worry about the waste, right? It's not a waste, there's a benefit. Don't worry about the painting of the animals, because that fits into a larger framework where we say that the mitzvah may well justify what seems to us to be inappropriate. And those are both topics for another time to really analyze and discuss the messages that sends. But even if we can resolve these negative reasons, these reasons not to do korbanos, we're still left with the question of, okay, but what is the benefit? What is the advantage? So if you take a look at the sheet, just look ahead quickly at my headings. I'm going to show you several different categories of explanations, And what I'm using here as my basis, and you'll see a lot of it going through, I quote him a lot here, is the work of the Ramah in his Taras HaOlah. I've discussed the Taras HaOlah, I think, on other occasions. The Taras HaOlah is the Ramah's explanation of Beis HaMikdash, structure of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kelim in the Beis HaMikdash. We used it, I think, when we talked about the Kruvim, maybe we talked about the Choshen. But in the beginning of Chelek Bet, he has three Chalak. At the beginning of Chelek Bet, he gives you what he numbers as a dozen different reasons for Korbanos that have been given through the ages, and then he gives you his own philosophy. The truth is that there are more sub-explanations within the explanations that he brings. So what I've done is I put them in order. In some cases I quote him just as easier. In some cases I give you primary source quotes. And then I brought you at the end my own attempt to deal with it. So the reasons, the categories of reasons here are, first of all, a very practical element, a funding reason for Korbanos, which we'll see. That's going to be number four. Then we're going to see a couple of different explanations that fit under the heading of we need Korbanos in order to prevent people from sinning. Then we need them as kapara. Kapara and tshuva are two different things. Kapara meaning for a means of avoiding punishment. Then we get to the reasons that associate Korbanos with tshuva, with a brilliant insight from Ralbag, an educational role for Korbanos, and a mystical benefit for Korbanos, before I get to my own idea at the end. So there's a lot here. Like I said, this is a two-parter. For all I know, it'll be a three-parter, because I want to lay this out properly. I don't want to race through it. So the first approach, which the Ramah quotes from the Toldos Yitzchak, he has a couple of different approaches from the Toldos Yitzchak, this is one of them, is very pragmatic. Take a look at number four. In the Ramah, it's reason number six. He says, Shimashich to'eles mehem l'hachayos ha-kohanim. For there to be a benefit that comes from this, the benefit being to keep the Kohanim alive, to support the Kohanim. Mora ha-Torah she-ra'oi li-kach derach l'achayosan. The Torah says, look, here you should try to find a way to keep them alive. L'man yuchlu ha-Kohanim l'aniach ha-sakim olamiyim v'yelehem p'nai la-asok b'Torah mitzvos. This way, they'll be able to involve themselves in teaching, they'll be able to involve themselves in the Beis HaMikdash. So we need to support them, and this way they get food via the karban, right? They also have support, obviously, from truma, you know, and matnos kahuna, but they get the meat from the karbanos. And even if you'll tell me, well, what about the karban ola, which is just burned? The answer is that the karban ola, they receive the hides. They get the skin of the animal, which is also useful. So the idea would be, on a very simple, basic level, funding. Get everybody to bring korbanos. It's another way to support the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Now, you'll tell me, well, wait a minute. If that's what it's all about, take the Kohanim out of the Beis HaMikdash, stop the Beis HaMikdash, you don't need korbanos, right? And then you don't need to pay for them, either. But the Beis HaMikdash serves functions beyond Karban. The Beis HaMikdash serves functions in terms of being a home for Hashem among the Jewish people and in the world, as a central site, the place where the Sanhedrin sits to make justice a religious activity. The Kohanim have a role in teaching. Like, even if you snap your fingers, well, okay, fine, you can't use that metaphor anymore. But even if you did something and there were no Karbanos, Beis HaMikdash would still have an identity. Okay. But that's your first. Second is a need to prevent averos. How can, before you look ahead, how can korbanos prevent people from sinning?
As a deterrent.
Good. So the Rambam brings the idea. The Rambam is famous for one idea on korbanos, but he actually said many things. One of the thing that he's most famous for, which we're going to come back to later, is the Jews are familiar with this type of service from what they saw among the nations, and God says, I can't wean them from that at this stage. This is how they relate to me, so they'll have korbanos, which is part of what the Rambam says, and we have to talk about that. But here, take a look at number five, and I took the lazy approach and just cut and pasted the Friedlander translation from the one available online. He says, the above-mentioned sin offerings further show us that when we commit a sin, we, our children, and the children of our children require atonement for that sin by some kind of service analogous to the sin committed. Right? The idea that you have to do something that is in line with what was done wrong. It has to parallel that. When this theory has been well established in the minds of the people, they must certainly be led by it to consider disobedience to God as a disgraceful thing. Right? Everyone will then be careful that he should not sin and require a protracted and burdensome atonement. He will be afraid he might not be able to complete it and will therefore altogether abstain from sinning and avoid it. Right? Otherwise, there's a duty for carbon, which isn't just for him, but in theory can affect his family down the line. So, the Rambam says, there's a cost here. Now, what's the weakness of that explanation? What's the weakness of that explanation for Karbanos? Not all Kaparos are about atonement. Right? Then why do I need a Shlomim? Why do I need an Ola? I mean, just the opposite. If you're going to tell me Karbanos are a disincentive for sin, then I'm going to tell you that the Karban Shlomim is a disincentive for thanking God when happy things happen to you. Right, a carbon toda is a disincentive for you to do a public celebration, right? I mean, you know, the you're right, there's a cost. But if you're going to view the cost as a disincentive, you're going to have a problem. But that's an explanation. If you're keeping score, the Ramah brings that one as reason number four. And then his fifth reason is a more, well, not, they're both down-to-earth reasons. They're both disincentives for sinning. But take a look at number six, where I brought you the Rama's version of it. He quotes the idea from Rabbeinu B'chaye and from Rabbi Yitzhak Arama, the Akedah. Sheyitin ha'adam elibo shechomer hu kishar chomrei balei chayim ye'aved. Or ye'aved, I don't know. For a person to take to heart that he is material. He is physical. And like the animal that's in front of him, this carbon, he will be destroyed one day as well. Not the idea, which we'll see later on, that it's as though I am sacrificing myself to God when I bring the carbon. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, it's a reminder of death. V'yichle k'chlos ha'olal ha'mizbeach, that he will end, as the carbon ola does when it's burned on the mizbeach. V'u adavar shebo nishtatev ha'adam im balei chayim. This is that with which the human being joins with living things. It's what we all have in common. So, and this will keep him from sinning because it will slow him down a little bit. It's going to get him to rein himself in, right? Like the Gemara in Brachos. Yizkor lo es yom hamisa. He remembers death, makes him stop. Right? It may not be the healthiest of motivations emotionally, but it's effective. So that's your second category. Your first category is carbonos are valuable because they help us fund the Kohanim. Your second is it prevents sin both financially and emotionally. Clear? Okay, Eitan, you're being very quiet here. You gotta chime in. Okay. Third, a need to avoid punishment. Not tshuva, as I wrote on the sheet, but a need to avoid punishment. How can a karban prevent you from being punished?
Like a heavenly punishment?
Yeah. Yeah, how can a karban prevent that? I don't mean, well, God said do this and then you won't be punished and therefore you won't be punished. I mean, just with even without that, how can a karban prevent the person from being punished? In general, you did something wrong. Not you. None of you would ever do anything wrong. But somebody, somewhere, committed an avera, right? They want to avoid punishment. What can happen for them, other than tshuva, that will get them to not be punished? Sorry?
I mean, classification should be a korban, but
yeah, korban's not it.
Yeah, it's not that.
So there are a couple of different, well, three different ways that this can work that the Ramah brings. I'm actually going to do them out of order because I realize that the way that I structured it, it should be done differently. But first things first, take a look at source number 7, which the Ramah brings as part of reason number 6, but I call it 6B because it's really not the same as number 6 as I understand it. 6B, that's your phone, I don't know. Don't worry about it, Mark, you're still on. But 6B, as well as the next reason we're going to give, are essentially like what they call controlled explosions, right? Where they discover an explosive, right, leftover mine from World War II or whatever it is, right, and they want to avoid it hurting anybody. So it's still going to explode, but in a way that we can control the damage, right, and avoid harm. So the first two of the three that I'm going to bring under avoiding punishment are like that. They're controlled explosions. Yes, you will. You're going to suffer for it, but it will be in a way that we can anticipate and that you're okay with. Take a look at number seven. The Rama says, "This is brilliant." I'm trying to remember now who he's quoting. It might be his own. He says, "Ba'oda kohenim ochlim b'sar hazevach tamid chatas hachote neged panav." Because the Kohanim are eating the meat from the carbon, so the sin of the sinner is literally opposite his face. Meaning, he's aware of it. The Kohanim all know so-and-so did something wrong. They may not know the specifics. The vidui isn't to the Kohanim. But they know that he made a mistake. And now he's going to be embarrassed because of this, among those Kohanim who are eating the carbon, umazkirim tamid shem habaylim al zivcho, and they are going to mention this is so and so's carbon. Vayidei habusha miskaper lo, so he'll be embarrassed. So we're going to now have the Kohanim involved in order to give him an element of shame, which will provide kapara, atonement. That's one controlled explosion. Second controlled explosion, and this is more distant from the person himself, is what I brought you in number 9. I'm jumping number 8 for the moment. I'm going to come back to it. The number 9 is an idea that the Rama quotes from Rabbeinu Bachaye, from the Akedah, and from the Toldos Yitzchak. It's also well known as an idea from Ramban, which I brought you in number 10. And this idea is that there's an element of kapara with the different actions of the carbon that correspond to the way the person sinned, and it's as though he is bringing himself on the Mizbeach, not as tshuva, but as kapara. Take a look at number 9, please. Rabbeinu Bachaye says, when Mesha kol pe'ulos ha'adam nichlalos b'shlosha devarim, he says, people act in three different arenas. V'heim, maisa, dibur, and machshava. Right? Deed, speech, and action. Shem shlosha chalkei achet. Those are three aspects of sin. Components, actually. I like my translation. Components. Al kein techayiv ha'taras ha'adam lavi karban al chatao. So the Torah says, bring a karban. V'she yismochas yadav alav keneged ha'maaseh. You lean your hands on it. That's parallel to deed. V'she yisvadet b'fiv keneged ha'dibur. And you acknowledge it verbally. That's parallel to speech. The speech of the sin. V'she yisrov klei ha'itzav ha'machshava she'yiskimu b'chet. And he burns the tools of the thoughts that were involved in the Avera. Those are the person's guts. This is a very old biological idea that your kidneys are actually what drives your thoughts. There's a lot to be said about this, but I'm not going there right now. So that way you atone for the three elements of sin. Sorry. It's not only an issue of tshuva. It's an issue of kapara. You are sacrificing essentially that with which you. That with which you caused harm. You're sacrificing the different elements of the chait process. The Ramban, I brought you in number 10. I didn't actually bring you the Hebrew, except I cut and pasted it from a source sheet that I had made where I didn't have the Hebrew on it for the people. So therefore you end up with it just in terms of the English. But the Ramban says a person's deeds are brought to fruition via thought, speech, and deed. And so Hashem commanded that one who sins should bring an offering, lean his hands on it to represent deed, verbally confess to represent speech, burn the innards on the fire, represent the organs of thought and desire. Same idea. It's a popular idea. So the kapara element, this issue of avoiding punishment, really, I guess this isn't the controlled explosion type of an idea. It's separate from that. It's that the actions that you are performing will somehow by associating with the elements of the Avera, be not, it's not a controlled explosion, you're exploding something else instead of yourself. The reason I note that is because that actually blends in with what we're going to say next in number 8, which is the 11th reason that the Ramah brings. It's not quite the same, but take a look. He says, HaKorban hu tmuras nafsho. Korban is in place of the person himself. It will save him from the decrees that were issued upon him. Because that which the constellations have decreed, meaning Hashem has created in the world a certain cause and effect, and the constellations are part of that. In their view, other than the Rambam, who thought that astrology was bunk, but not for modern reasons, just that the Rambam felt astrology is bunk. But they believed that just like we have other forces we cannot explain, that function, they're not visible, but I know that gravity works, right? I can do a good job of imitating what I've heard physicists say to explain it, but I don't actually know what I'm talking about. But gravity works, and there are radio waves and so on, so they believed that the planets exert some kind of force at God's command. It's natural, it's not supernatural. So what he's saying here is that God wanted the person to get zapped. He moved everything in place such that it would happen. Now it's got to happen. Just like the piano is falling on the person who's walking below it on the street, God forbid, it's going to fall and smash on him. That's the way it's going to work. You know, unless he is some out-of-this-world tzaddik such that he deserves a miracle that changes nature, he's in trouble. So too here. It's already been decreed. So what do you do? So Hashem finds some other way to fulfill that which has been decreed and save this guy. It is effectively the person's substitute. So this idea that he brings sort of takes what we said in 9 and 10 a little bit further. Again, within our kapara elements. Okay? We have three ideas. One, the controlled explosion. The idea that you have to get hurt, but do it this way. The shame of the carbon is the way that it's going to take place. Then, number two, we said, is the idea that there is kapara in the sense that thought, speech, and deed were punished by their involvement in the carbon. And then the third, most extreme, is something's got to pay. A price must be paid. We're deflecting it onto the carbon. Those are all within this idea that it's about punishment of some kind. What's the weakness in all of these explanations? There's one weakness that's common to all of these. The same weakness that was involved in the Rambam's explanation that sin has to come with a financial cost. Which is, this only works for carbonists that are about sin. Right? Again, shlamim, I don't know, voluntary ola, just because I feel like it, I don't see the relevance. Right? But that's the way, that's the narrow slice, and it's not a narrow slice, it's probably a major slice, of carbonos that we're explaining here. Are we clear? Okay. The last one that I'll bring, I think, this time, is Ralbag. And this is just brilliant. Is just absolutely brilliant psychologically. This is within the category of karbanos being about tshuva. It will clearly have the same weakness that it only explains the chet karbanos, although I think that you could apply it further than karbanos. And this is Ralbag. There's one other tshuva idea that I'm not bringing on here because I just don't understand it enough to be able to explain it. It's from the Toldos Yitzchak, and the Ramah brings it as his seventh reason, and it is that you're burning the Ruach Hatuma on the Mizbeach. But I don't know what that means. I'm not holding in Ruach Hatuma. I don't know what that means. So I mention it, fine. But that's your tshuva. But take a look at 11 with the Ralbag. It's something that you certainly can relate to. He says, "Hatoelas harishon, the first benefit, hu lahayshir ha'anashim kasher chatu, is to straighten people out when they sin. It is to guide them to return to Hashem, and He will atone for or wipe away their sins. He says, that's great. This helps a person reach completeness. What do you mean? He says, there's no one who doesn't sin. Right? That's just the way it is. And if people believe, you know, I've done something wrong, and the stain of that sin is going to remain before God forever, then they'll just keep on sinning. They're going to think, forget it, it's over, I'm done. And they're going to think, even if I stay away from sinning in the future, it's always going to be on me. Right? The spot, Shakespearean. I can't get away from this. But when they know, but when they know that when they return from, when they do tshuva from this avera, then Hashem will in fact wipe away their sin. Then they'll do tshuva. What he's talking about is a very real problem today. Meaning, you know, before Yom Kippur, yeah, again, not you, people. No, before Yom Kippur, they've done certain things wrong during the course of the year. Hopefully, decidedly minor things. But they've done things, whatever minor means. Fine, don't say averas are minor. But they've done certain things wrong. They come into Yom Kippur, and they've got their list. They start davening. They say their vidui. They list off everything that they've done wrong. That takes care of, you know, the mincha, Shmona Esrei. They did their vidui once. They do the vidui again at Marav that night. They do vidui again at Shacharis the next day. They do vidui again at Musaf the next day. They do vidui again at Mincha. They do vidui again at Ne'ilah. How do they know when they've done enough? How do they know when it's over?
When they make it on to the next year.
Really? Do we really believe it's a one-to-one correlation there? That's a very hard thing to say. How do you know when it's when you hit that point where you've done enough? And the answer is you don't. You can't know. And so the problem is, where's the closure? Right? The Rambam talks about doing tshuva repeatedly, year after year, for things that you did wrong in previous years. What Ralbag says is that korbanos offer closure. Because here we have the ritual. The Torah says, apologize, right? Do your vidui, bring your karban, and it's over. That's it. You move on. And that's what enables a person to be able, the psychological elements what enables a person to be able to move on. It's a beautiful idea. It makes so much sense. That it's simply, you need a statement of, do this, and you can move on in life. So, again, this is the same weakness of it's only about sin, unless you're going to argue that there's also a closure element of I did enough to thank God when I bring a carbon to express my joy, right? Enough to feel like, did I do enough? You know, here it is. This is your ritual. Maybe you could expand this beyond Ralbag's narrow application to use it for korbanos in general. But I think it's a very powerful idea. So what we still have left for next time is korbanos as an educational tool, which has a couple of different applications, as well as the mystical benefits of the korbanos, which are just fascinating. And then last, my own idea of what the korbanos are doing, which I think is not, I mean, it's my own in the sense that I formulated it this way. I don't think I'm inventing something. I think it's very clear within the Torah itself. So God willing, Shushan Purim, we'll do the second part. Okay?
Shkaya.